Last week we discussed the practice that they have in Eretz Yisrael for many years already.
Just two numerical observations. One, the Churban of Bayis Sheni occurred in the year 68, not in the year 70, which works out not only from a comparative chronological basis, but if you do the math, it's the only way it turns out to be a Motzai Shemitah also. So that's one. The other is, it took me a little time to find out, because Maskeret Batya was the name that was given later to a settlement that was first founded under the name of Ekrom. So it appears that while there might have been only seven families in the original group that settled there, by the time, by 1897, by the time that the Shemitah controversy arose, there were apparently a couple of dozen families.
Good. Thank you. So last week we spoke about what's practiced by many of the farmers in Eretz Yisrael, that's known as the Heta Mechira, that they sell a land to a non-Jew, and based on the Gemara, they assume that because Shemitah today is only Midirabbanon, it's not required Minat Torah, so the Gemara seems to say that in such a situation, Yesh Kinyan Anachri L'Hafkiyah, that if it belongs to a non-Jew, the laws of Shemitah wouldn't apply. So this was a big dispute we mentioned last week. There were many who didn't accept this Heta Mechira. So those who did accept that the Cheshbon was right, so they said, well, this is what we do before Pesach. We sell our chametz to a non-Jew. We do Mechiras chametz. And we don't feel uncomfortable about that, in order to avoid Bal Yerabai Matzah. And this is where the institution of Mechiras chametz was developed in the 1800s. They rarely had Mechiras chametz. It appears in the Tosefta Mesachim talks about Mechiras chametz in the following situation. If someone is traveling on a boat, and he's going to be on the boat for a month or two, so he has to have all of the food with him. So he's going to throw all the food over into the ocean. He's not going to have any food to eat. So he has to retain his kosher food. So he wants that, and the other passengers on the boat are non-Jews. So he makes a harama. He'll sell the chametz to the guy, and he'll tell the guy, I want to buy it back after the holiday is over. So that's the original source from the Mechiras chametz. But that you have the rabbi, have everybody sign up on the document, that everybody, the whole community, everybody's selling the chametz to the non-Jew, and all the storekeepers are selling all the chametz to the non-Jew. That was developed. That Heta Mechira was developed in the 1800s. So that was developed based on a practice that they had from the days of the Rishonim, Mechiras Behema HaMevakeres. That there were many Jewish farmers in Europe. There's still in Eretz Yisrael, in America, there were Jewish farmers, religious Jewish farmers. So the din is that if a Jew owns a cow and he gives birth to the first calf, is male, it's a zachar, so it has a kedushas carbon, and even bizman shabes hamigdusha yekayim, so we're obligated to give this calf, the bechor, to a kohen. The kohen's supposed to bring it to the beis hamigdusha mimakrivit, and then he eats the flesh of the carbon, and Yerushalayim, it's a kachem kal. Bizman shein beis hamigdushkayim, so he's supposed to give it to the kohen. The kohen has to wait till it gets a mum. He's not permitted to cause it to have a mum. He has to wait till it develops a mum on its own, which may take forever. And then the kohen has a right to shecht it outside of the Beis HaMikdash and to eat it. So because it may take forever, the Mishnah in Bechoris describes a shaila that happened in the days of the Tanoim, that there was a Roman policeman who his beat was on a certain road, a certain highway, and every day, every week, he would pass by the Jewish farmer's farm, and he would see that the farmer would always use all the other animals to do work, and one animal he never used. So he asked him, what is that, a holy cow? So he said, yes, that's a holy cow. He said, what do you mean? He tells him it's the firstborn, it's a male, and we're supposed to offer it as a sacrifice on the Mizbeach. We don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so we have to wait till it gets a mum. So he said, so make a mum. What's the problem? Not allowed to make a mum. So he said, so no problem. So the Goyish policeman took out his knife, and he cut off the ear of the behemoth. So the Mishnah has a whole discussion. Is that considered as if you encouraged the farmer? It didn't occur to the Jewish farmer that the guy's going to help him out. The guy's going to make a mum. So the Mishnah has a whole discussion. If the Jew made the mum, so there's a penalty, he has to wait till he gets another mum. Or if the Jew encouraged the non-Jew to make the mum, so again, he has to wait till it develops another mum on its own by itself. But if the guy made the mum on his own, you didn't encourage him, so then you're permitted to shecht the bechor the way it is now and have the kohen eat it. So the Mishnah has that discussion. So Tosfos writes that this was instituted in the days of the Balei HaTosfos. They would always sell a shutfus to a non-Jew. You don't have to sell the whole by mechiras chametz. You have to sell all the chametz. If you have 100 units of chametz, you're gonna leave one unit of chametz for yourself. So you'll be in violation of Bal Yerabai Matzei on that ounce of chametz. But if you have a behema hamavakeres, a cow is about to give birth for the first time, so all you need is that the non-Jew should have even less than 1% shutfis in the behema. He owns a leg of the animal, he owns a little bit, any slight part. Gemara has a dispute, how much does he have to own? And the conclusion is any part of any percentage of the animal, and already he solves the problem of b'chor behema tohira. So this was the practice for many years, that the Jewish farmers would sell a partnership to the non-Jew and the behema hamavakeres. And the mechiras chametz was instituted patterned after the selling of the behema hamavakeres. I remember quite a few years ago, 25 years ago, I was in the middle of giving a shiur in the yeshiva. So in the middle of the shiur, somebody comes and he says, there's a telephone call for me. So I said, tell him I'm in the middle of a shiur, and I'll call him back later. He said, no, I told me in the middle of the shiur, they said it's very urgent, it's an emergency. I thought me or there, someone's dying. So I went to the telephone. So it's a rabbi from the Midwest. He baklogs, he's complaining. He has a balabos who is becoming a bal tshuva. Oy gewalt, the balabos started to read the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch in English. And it says in the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch that if you own a farm, this balabos owned the farm in the Midwest. If you own a farm, and this was the springtime, Nissan time, that's when the behemoths give birth. So it says if you own a farm and you have a behemoth that's about to give birth, and there's a 50-50 chance, it may be a zoch, it may be in a keva, so you have to sell a shutfus to the non-Jew. So the rabbi says that they're about to give birth any minute, so he has to know, how do you make a shutfus, how do you sell the behemoth to the vakeris? So this rabbi at that time was in his mid-50s, and he was a practicing rabbi all along, from the time that he got smicha from the yeshiva. He was in the rabbin all along. So I said, did you ever do mechiras chametz? Of course I did mechiras chametz. I said, mechiras chametz is patterned after mechiras behema hamavakeres. Exactly the way you do the mechiras chametz, that's how you do that. So he says to me on the phone, could you review with me again how do you do the mechiras chametz? He wants to make sure. Mestama, all the rabbanim probably got together and had one rav do the mechiras chametz. And now it's his responsibility. He has to do the mechiras behema hamavakeres. So Mestaka, it was urgent. He called me out in the middle of shiur. He said, the behemoths are about to give birth any minute. So that's what many tainted. They said, look, we have this practice, we have this harama that's called the legal fiction, but it's legal. I'm not really interested in selling Eretz Yisrael to the Arabs. I would prefer to keep it myself, but if I won't sell it to the Arabs, I'll have a problem with Shemitah. So in order to solve our problems, we sell the chametz to the non-Jews, so we avoid violation of Bal Yorah by Matzeh. We sell the behema that's about to give birth, or shutfus, to the non-Jews, so we avoid the issue of Bechor Behema Torah. So the same over here. It's the same style, heter, and there's nothing wrong with it.
How's the conflict with Lois Kohanim avoided?
Right, that we spoke about last week. That's a serious issue. Many hold it's not avoided, and then we said why many hold that there's Mokum Lahok. So there was a famous Rav in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Mendelson. He was the Rav in Koma Meyut, if I'm not mistaken, that's a Poele Aguda Kibbutz.
No, and they it's not Aguda.
Oh, it was always Aguda.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
I apologize.
Okay.
Oh, okay. So this Rav Mendelson suggested a svara lechalek. Why it's different? Mechiras chometz everybody does, and mechiras Eretz Yisrael not. So he suggested the following svara: by chometz, we don't sell all the chametz that we have. We sell 99% of the chametz to the non-Jew. We leave our little chametz that we burn the next day. So the little bag of chametz, 10 pieces of chametz, or whatever more chametz you have. So we're going to fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu. There's a mitzvah to burn the chametz that you have on Erev Pesach. So we leave our little chametz that we're not going to sell. We fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu. Is it considered a fatter and a bigger and a better mitzvah if you would have 100 pounds of chametz as opposed to 1 pound of chametz? No. You have to destroy the last bit of chametz that you have. So you sell 99% and you leave over 1 pound and you burn that 1 pound. So the motivation to sell the chametz, to sell the 99% of the chametz, is in order to avoid violation of Bal Yorah by Matzeh on that. It's not in order to relieve ourselves from observance of the mitzvah of Tashbisa. We are going to fulfill Tashbisa. We are going to burn a little bit of chametz. But here by Shnas HaShemitah, there is an Avera to plant during Shnas HaShemitah to do the Avodas HaKarka. So if you sell to the non-Jew, you're avoiding violation of an Avera. But in addition to an Avera, it's also a mitzvah. Whoever owns a plot of land in Eretz Yisrael, so there's a mitzvah, V'shav Sahara Shabbos Lashem, to let the land sit fallow. So if you're going to sell the land to a non-Jew, and we'll be following that opinion in the Gemara, that because Shemitah today is only with the Rabbanon, so the whole mitzvah of Shemitah is removed, So not only have you avoided violation of the Avera, you've ruined the possibility to fulfill the mitzvah. So that you're not allowed to do. To use a harama, to use a legal fiction, is only permissible in a case similar to Mechiras Chametz, where you're avoiding violation of an Avera. So avoid the Avera by hook or by crook, and sure, just avoid the Avera. But if doing the harama causes you to lose out on the possibility of fulfilling a mitzvah, so that you're not allowed to do. And so the Chazon Ish got very excited, and Rav Mendelsohn told us over to the Chazon Ish, he thought that that's a very strong svara. And the Chazon Ish was also very opposed. The Chazon Ish was opposed intuitively. He felt that it's not proper to sell the land in Eretz Yisrael to the Arab. But he didn't know exactly how to formulate it. Why is it different from Mechiras Chametz? Why is it that everybody subscribes to the Mechiras Chametz? And over here, so one could say that it doesn't help. That's what we went through last week. One could say that ain't shliach l'dvar averet, it's an isar v'leisachonim, and since they have the rabbanut, service of shliach, so the whole mechira doesn't take effect. One could argue on the whole thing and say, even if you sell it directly to the non-Jew, maybe the Gemara doesn't apply in this case. These are other arguments. But if one should assume that the heter is correct, so why should one be opposed to the heter? If you hold the heter is valid, so the Chazon Ish was still opposed, but he was opposed intuitively, he couldn't formulate why he was opposed. So when Mendelsohn developed this idea, so he thought that was correct.
Would he agree to leave over possibly in the time of the essay? He was against it no matter what.
So there were Mizrahi kibbutzim where they would sell 99%, like Mechiras Chametz, they would sell 99% of the kibbutz and leave over 1%, and they were yotzei the mitzvah on that. So the Pashta says that it's not the same. When you burn the chametz that you have left over on Erev Pesach, you don't have a bigger and a better and a fatter hidden mitzvah because you burned 100 pounds of chametz. You burn the last bit of chametz that you have, if it's 1 pound or 100 pounds. It's the same mitzvah of tashbisa. But over here, if you own a big farm and you only leave fallow 1% or less than 1% of the farm, so you're really mevatel a mitzvah from the rest of the farm. The Pashta says that it's not the same as by the Mechiras chametz, that we just leave over a little bit.
So
the truth of the matter is that this distinction between what motivates me to do the legal fiction, the harama, is it in order to avoid violation of an avera, or is it in order to avoid fulfilling a mitzvah? Tosfos writes this with respect to selling the animal that's about to give birth. So Tosfos says they recommend that all the Jewish farmers should make a shutfus but an anju before the behemoth is about to give birth, even though in the Gemara it says that this is forbidden. The Gemara says one of the Rabbonim did it and he was punished and all of his animals died. Kolu kuli chevos. So Akan Tosis recommends it if the Gemara says it's an Avera. So Tosis says no, the Gemara is talking at a time that it was possible to fulfill the mitzvah. Let's say in the days of the Beis HaMikdash. So if you have a B'chor behemoth Torah, you can bring it to the Beis HaMikdash. That's not right. To make a shutfus with a non-Jew, then you're making it impossible. You're losing out on the mitzvah. So that you're not allowed to do. But Tosis says, Bizman Azeh, we can't fulfill the mitzvah. So what motivates us to sell the shutfus to the non-Jew and the behemoth that's about to give birth is because we're afraid it may take forever till the behemoth is going to develop a mum on its own. And until it's going to develop a mum, probably somebody by mistake will use this animal to do malocha. And that's an avera. It says in Chumash, Leisave bebechor sherecha velasogas bechor tzenach. You're not allowed to use the behemah gizav avoida on karbonis, specifically on bechor. The pasuk says on bechor, but gizav avoida is also on all karbonis. So Tosfos says that bizman hazeh, that we don't have a beis hamikdash, what motivates us to make the shutfus with the nanju on the behemah that's about to give birth is because we're afraid someone's going to violate the iser. It's not that we're motivated because we want to pater ourselves from the mitzvah. The mitzvah ben kovakov we're not going to be able to fulfill. So Tosfos makes that distinction. To do a harama in order to pater yourself from a mitzvah, that's not proper. And if you do that, you're going to be punished min hashamayim. The Gemara says all of his animals died because he wasn't allowed to do such a harama. But Bizman Hazeh, we recommend it because the motivation to do the harama is in order to save people from violating the Issur of Avoda B'Kodesh. So that's why, even if one were to assume that the whole Heter Mechira is correct, And if you sell it to a non-Jew, it would be mutter to do the Avodas HaKarka. But many Gedolim thought that it's not proper to use a harama in such a situation. Others felt, even if one were to assume that everything is absolutely kosher v'yosher, everything is absolutely permissible, but still, the whole Zionist movement, the whole idea that we should move back to Eretz Yisrael, of establishing all of these kibbutzim and so on, was in order to be able to return to the fulfillment of all of the mitzvahs HaKliyos Ba'aretz. So you're going to move back to Eretz Yisrael, knowing in advance that you plan to pati yourself from the mitzvah. So there were those who argued it does make sense historically. We're living in a time we want to return to Eretz Yisrael in order to fulfill all the mitzvahs, and then we're going to just move to Eretz Yisrael and pati ourselves from the mitzvahs. So these were some of the arguments that were formulated in the big machlokes in the late 1800s. I mentioned last week that these three rabbanim, Rabbi Shmuel Molliver, was the one who encouraged Rothschild to support the founding of this moshav. And then, so he was one of the rabbanim. He felt the responsibility to help out these religious balabatim. So he worked out this hetem mechira, and then he got another to rabbanim, Rabbi Shmuel Kutner, with the dayan from Warsaw to agree along. And then they sent the issue to Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan. He was considered the major poisek in that generation, so he was machriya lahakel. He signed on also. So they have in various collections of different essays and different letters that were written about the whole dispute of the Hetem Mechira. So they have a letter from Rabbi Lezer Telzer. Rabbi Lezer Gordon was the Rav in Telzer. He founded the Telzer Yeshiva. So he sent a letter, a private letter, to another Rav, which somehow got printed later on. So he, thank you very much. Okay. So he writes in this private letter, it was not intended for publication, but they went and they printed it. So he writes in his letter, he thinks that it was improper on the part of Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan to make this decision on his own. He should have consulted with more rabbanim. It's not a shaila of an aguna for one woman. It's not a shaila of a serious shaila. Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan, they sent all the shailas of agunas. So he would paskin on them. It wasn't the shaila of selling a shul, buying a church and making it into a shul, all the other tshuvas Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan has. No, this is a shaila for the whole Klal Yisrael. The whole Klal Yisrael in Eretz Yisrael, it's going to affect everybody in Chutzlor, it's the whole world over. So Rabbi Lezer Telzer felt that it was improper. I don't know if he would want to be Mefarsimet, but they were Mefarsimet in his letter. So he wrote in his personal private letter that he thinks that it was improper on the part of Rabbi Yitzchak Hanan that he gave a psak on this issue without consulting all the other rabbis. Regarding the Shnas HaShmita, the seventh year, when we read the Chumash, so we see that there are three different inyanim of Kedusha, of sanctity, that we're talking about. There's a Kedusha in Eretz Yisrael. Eretz Yisrael Mekudash is Mikol HaRotah, so that's why the laws of Shmita only apply in Eretz Yisrael, with the exception of the Shmita's Ksofim that we spoke about last week. Then you're talking about the Kedushas HaZman. Every Shabbos, every seventh day has Kedushas. Every seventh year has a Kedushas HaZman. Then there's another Pasuk. So these are obvious in the Chumash. There's Kedushas HaRetz and there's Kedushas V'kidashtem Shnasa Shmita, V'kidashtem Shnasa Chamishim, the Yovel Yeh. Then there's another Pasuk that talks about Kedusha. The Rashi quotes from the Tanoim, that additional Pasuk is talking about the Kedushas Perishvis. The Peris that grow in Eretz Yisrael are endowed with Kedusha. What's the significance of Kedusha? No such thing as abstract Kedusha. When you say Eretz Yisrael has Kedusha, and the Mishnah lists off which mitzvahs only apply in Eretz Yisrael and don't apply in Chutz Lo'aretz. When the Mishnah says, Ayoras HaMekof Eschom HaMimos Yishuv Ben Nun, the walled cities from the days of Yishuv Ben Nun have a higher level of Kedusha than the rest of Eretz Yisrael, so the Mishnah says, what's the halachic relevance, what's the significance? Yerushalayim has more Kedusha than the other Ayoras HaMekof Eschom, so the Mishnah says, what are the dinim? The Mishnah lists off Eser Kedushas, the 10 levels of Kedusha, Eretz Yisrael, and each line in the Mishnah tells you has Kedusha with respect to this din. We say there's Kedusha's Kahuna, the Kohanim have special dinim. There's Kedusha's Leviim, the Leviim has special dinim. Whenever you talk, there's Kedusha's Tefillin, there's Kedusha's Sefer Torah. So when you speak about Kedusha, Kedusha means Kedushana b'metzoysa v'tzivana. Kedusha means that it's Nagel Halacha. So when we say that the Peris that grow in Eretz Yisrael have a Kedusha, there's Kedusha's Perishvis, with respect to what do they have Kedusha's Perishvis? So the pasuk says, "V'hoisa Shabbos haaretz lachem liochlo." What does that mean? So the Gemara speaks a lot about liochlo v'lo lehepsid. You have to treat the perish shviyas with kedusha that you're not allowed to be mafsid them. You're not allowed to throw them out. You're not allowed to throw out the perish all the time. There's a din of bal tashchis. So what's the chiddush? No. It means it's more than bal tashchis. Even in a situation where there wouldn't be a violation of bal tashchis, perishvis, you're not allowed to throw out because it's an additional din. So take lemoshul. I just said havdol at home. So many, I don't have this practice. My father never had the practice. Many people have the practice. They say havdol and they have the wine spill over because the Gemara says an erevin. that if the wine spills on Matzoi Shabbos, it's a simen bracha for the whole week. My mother used to say it's a simen shlum. But many people have such a in Shulchan Aruch think about it's a simen bracha. It's a gemara and erim. It's a simen bracha. Or many people, they leave over a little bit. They don't want to blow out the Havdalah candle, so they pour the wine on Havdalah flame to put it out. So what do they do with that wine? They throw it out. So why isn't that a violation of Bal Tashchis? So in Shulchan Aruch, they defend this practice. They all have such a practice. They say, whenever it's Litzara B'nei Adam, there's no Issa Bal Tashchis. So you have some kind of a reason why you don't want to blow out the flame. You want to pour the Havdalah or wine on it. So that's not a violation of Bal Tashchis. So let's say we finished eating, and someone is full. He doesn't want to stuff himself. He doesn't want to eat every piece of chicken, every piece of kugel, every piece of cholent, whatever he has. He leaves over a little bit. So what are you going to do? You can wrap everybody's up and put it in the refrigerator. So if you have guests, let's say you had a bar mitzvah, you have 200 guests. So everyone's going to wrap it up and put it in the refrigerator. And then what are you going to do with it? You're going to serve it next week. What are you going to serve? What are you going to do? So you throw it out in the garbage. What are you going to do? If you have someone who's interested in eating it, so give it to the someone who's going to eat it. But what do you mean? You're going to save it for tomorrow? Tomorrow they're going to want fresh fruit. They're not going to want the leftovers. So we assume there is no Bal Tashchis in such a situation. But Perish Vias, that's what the Poskim say. Oh, let's say on Pesach night. On Pesach night, we fill up the cup of wine. Let me say, Dom, Tzvadea, Kinamor, you spill over a little bit of wine. What happens to the wine that you spill over? It's Holach Leibud. You don't drink that wine. It goes down the drain. So that's what the Poskim say. You shouldn't use Shemitah wine if you make... The grapes do grow during Shnas HaShemitah. They do grow a little bit, so you can make wine from it. I don't know how good it's going to taste. So if you make wine from the Perish Vias, so that wine should not be used to pour out the Havdalah flame, and you shouldn't spill over that wine. You shouldn't put it in your pockets and on your ears and whatever, on your eyes. The Gemara talks about on the eyes. And you shouldn't use it for Arbekaisis to spill out. And if people finished eating and they left over some of the potatoes that grew in Shnas HaShemitah, so you're not allowed to throw that out in the garbage because tomorrow no one wants to eat it. They want to eat fresh food. You have to wrap it up in a bag and put it in the... You have to wrap it up in a bag. But Lemay said, we're not going to eat it. So I'm going to wrap it up in a bag. I'm going to put it in the refrigerator. So everybody knows, those who spent a while in Eretz Yisrael and Shnas HaShemitah, they don't put it in the refrigerator. A Shemitah bag. So you wrap it up and you put it on the side. Then you have to wait. No one's going to eat it. But you're not allowed to destroy it, even though there's no Bal Tashchis. All year long, there is no Bal Tashchis. But if it's Perish Vias, there's a din le'ochle v'lo lehefsid, you're not allowed to destroy it. So you have to wait till it gets spoiled, till it sniffs on the Achil HaSodom. Once it's not right Achil HaSodom, then you throw it out. So that's the din of le'ochle v'lo lehefsid.
Can you give it to animals?
Are you permitted to let animals eat Perish Vias? Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I thought there was a question.
Regular,
yeah, because it's a
pasuk. The pasuk says. Yeah.
But I thought in general you're not supposed to give human food to animals.
Right. There is a din in the Shulchan Aruch based on Gemara that it's not proper to give human food to animals. I mean, what about the leftovers, Mr. Tom? I would think you are allowed to.
So it's a special you have leftover heter food. Be a heter by Shvius.
Yeah. Instead of waiting till it gets spoiled, so we should feed it to the animals. And Achinami.
But that gives new meaning to Roy Lachilas Keller, too.
What?
It gives new meaning to Roy Lachilas Keller.
Yeah, I don't think you would need over here Roy Lachilas Keller. The mitzvah liyachla is only because man it's Roy Lachilas Keller. Once it becomes nifsim achilas Keller, even though it's Roy Lachilas Keller, you can feed it to the dogs or gavaldik. But I don't think you're mechuyev to feed it to the dog. I think by that point you're allowed to throw it out. So that's the din. The Gemara has dinim based on. The Gemara talks a lot about the din of li'ochla, Shabbos arts lechem li'ochla, the kedushas, perish shviyas. So the Gemara talks about all of the yisurim. So the Gemara says li'ochla v'lo lehefsid. You're not allowed to throw it out. Or the Gemara has li'ochla v'lo lemenochas. All 6 years of the Shemitah cycle, if you grow wheat in Eretz Yisrael, so it's not a violation of Bal Tashchis. If I take the wheat and I grind that up, I make it into flour and I bring a korban mincha. Korban mincha, I'm burning it. That's not a violation of Bal Tashchis. I'm burning on a mizbech, I'm bringing it as a korban. But in Shnas HaShemitah, you're not permitted to take, if any wheat grows in the Shnas HaShemitah, you're not permitted to take that wheat and burn it on the mizbeach as a korban mincha. The Gemara has a drosha, liochla v'lola menochas. It's included in liochla v'lola hefsid, but it wouldn't, all 6 years long, it wouldn't be a violation of Bal Tashchis, but in Shnas HaShemitah, it's a violation of liochla v'lola even though it's Makam Mitzvah, you can't say, that's what Rav Kook and all the others said, you're not allowed to use the Shemitah wine for a Havdalah to pour out the candle. So others tina no, but it's a makam mitzvah on Pesach night. No, but makam mitzvah the tina. So he says well, it doesn't help makam mitzvah. Even for a carbon mincha, it's a real bona fide mitzvah, not just a minig mitzvah, a real mitzvah. He's still not allowed to. Odin Mar has a drasha liyachlav alola melugma. Let's say you take pears that grow in America, anywhere in the world, so there's a din about tashchis and not a lot of wasted. So let's say I take the pears and I don't eat them like normal people eat it. I make medicine out of it. I make a melugma out of it. So that's not about tashchis. If you take food and you make it into a medication to heal sick people, so there's no violation about tashchis. But to take perish shvi is that a roi lachilo, and to make it into a malugma, to make it into a medication which is only fit for sick people, healthy people wouldn't eat it, so that's a violation of liochla v'lola hefsid. Or included in liochla v'lola hefsid would be the following. Let's say I have oranges and I make orange juice. So what's that there? Everybody drinks, everybody makes orange juice. They're making, it's a multi-billion dollar business. They make orange juice. So the Gemara says, what bracha they say on orange juice? We don't say hoitz. Some are of the opinion that if they're juice oranges and they were planted melechatchil al das to make juice, that you say hoitz. But that's not the accepted opinion. We say that all juices except for grape juice are not called pri. The grape juice and the olive oil retain the status of pri. Sometimes the Gemara says you say bar pri hoitz on olive oil and on wine, on grapes, you say bar pri hagofen, so it's still considered a pri after you squeezed it out. So the accepted opinion of Shulchan Aruch is the only grape juice and olive oil retains the same pri, and all the juices. Now they finally discovered that you make pomegranate juice. The Gemara talks about pomegranate juice. Tyson very minor. The Tanoim knew the secret that you can get rich by selling pomegranate juice. So the Gemara talks about all other juices. So the Gemara says you don't say bar pri hoitz, because we say it's not considered a pri. So all of the poskim say to take oranges that have kedushas perishvis and to bake it into juice, that's considered liochla v'lola hefsid. But I would rather drink the juice. I don't want to eat it. It tastes better in the form of juice. The juice oranges don't taste as good as the eating oranges. I would rather make juice out of it. So the poskim say, no, that's a violation of liochla v'lola hefsid, because the way it grew, it's a pri. When you're going to make juice out of it, it's going to lose its same pri. So that's a violation of, the Gemara has the same thing regarding Truma, not only regarding Shemitah, not only Perishvis, the Gemara and Brochas. The Gemara talks about squeezing out the juice, that you say Shahakal on the juice, you don't say Bar Pihoetz. So the Gemara quotes a Mishnah in Trumas, that we have a din on Mishmeres Trumaisai. When you have Truma, you have to preserve the Truma. Number one, that it shouldn't become Tame, and number two, that it shouldn't get ruined, it shouldn't get spoiled. So the Gemara says, if you have oranges, Shal Truma, a farmer has an orange grove. He's mafrish 2% for truma. He gives it to the kohen. The kohen takes it. He makes orange juice out. There's going to be truma orange juice that's mutter for kohanim. So the Gemara says he's not allowed to make orange juice. If he makes orange juice out of the oranges, that's a violation of mishmeres trumaisa, because he took a pri and it destroyed its status of a pri. So the person can say the same is true regarding perish shvius. That's all included in the din of liochla v'lola hefsid.
Except for
Except wine, yeah, wine you could make from grapes that grew in Shemitah, you could make wine, just shouldn't use it for abacosis because you're going to spill it. Add them for avodah, right? So olive oil.
Okay, so how about something like a quince, which is shehakol ra, and then when it's cooked, it becomes ha'etz. Then would it be better to cook it in that case as opposed to leaving it shehakol?
Yeah.
The raw thing?
Yeah, that would be good.
So that would be also an exception where.
Yeah, let's say
it
potatoes.
Would be better.
Yeah, potatoes is abnormal to eat raw potatoes. So if you eat a potato raw, you say shahakol. But if you cook the potato, then it becomes bar pi adam. So that's not a nisa. But let's say if you have oranges, that normally in America we eat raw oranges, when you cook the orange, that's ishtani ligriyusa, it loses the din of pri, so it loses the bracha bar pi, so it would be shahakol. Then you wouldn't be allowed to cook oranges on shnas hashmit. Okay. Right. The rules of birchas hanen would be carried over there. So these are the dinim that the Gemara talks about. The Kedushas Perishviyas, with respect to Liochla Valola Hefsid, you're not allowed to throw it out in the garbage even though there's no Baltashchis. The Shirayim that you left over, you're not going to eat it anyway, but you're not mukhif to put it in the refrigerator because you don't plan to eat it later on. You're not mukhif to save it in the freezer, Liochla Valola Hefsid. But you leave it till it gets spoiled. Liochla Valola Menachas, Liochla Valola Melugma, not to make medication out of it. The Gemara has another din, Liochla Valola Schora. You're not allowed to make big business with the perishvis. Let's say I go down to the farm and I pick off a dozen oranges. I don't need all the dozen oranges today. So I'm going to eat some today. My wife, my children, everyone's going to eat. Then the next door neighbor says, oh, you have a dozen oranges? Do me a favor. Give me 6 oranges. So I said, you go pick the oranges. Why should I pick the oranges for you? They have no time. So they ask me, as a tayv, I should give them. So the Gemara says, I'm allowed to charge them money. I'm allowed to sell them. I took the oranges for myself. That's not what I do for a living. I'm not going to make a parnasa by selling the 6 oranges. But if a guy's going to go pluck off all the oranges, and he's going to make a whole parnasa, he's going to make a major business out of this, and that's a violation of liochlo below the schor. You're not permitted to do schor with the perishvis. Then the Gemara has another din. What if I sell some perishvis? I have a dozen oranges, and the next the neighbor needs 6 oranges now. So I say, okay, give me $2. Give me $1, so I'll give you. So when I give them the oranges and they give me $1, so the perishvis are topsim de mehem. Just like there's a din of Hegdish, that if Hegdish sells peris to someone and they pay money, so the money is nitvas bigdushas Hegdish, or there's such a din by Maisa Sheni, if you intend this, you can remove the kedusha from the Maisa Sheni and transfer it onto the money. See, when you sell perishvis to somebody else, the perishvis remain perishvis, but the money that's given as the mehamekach is teifes damal. The perishvis are teifes in the bayam. So the money has kedusha as perishvis. So what do you have to do with the money? You have to eat the money. So the din is no, you have to use that money to buy food. You can't use that money to buy furniture or to buy clothing or to buy anything else. You have to use that money to buy food, and you have to eat that food before the Zman HaBiur. That's, we'll have to get to that later. What is there is an institution of Zman HaBiur that's in the 8th year. Shas HaBiur is in the 8th year. We'll have to say that to a later time. So this is all part of the din of Kedushas Perishvis. The Gemara only speaks about the Yisurim. Involved liochlo v'lo lazel, liochlo v'lo lemenachas, liochlo v'lo lehepsid, liochlo v'lo leschora, liochlo v'lo lemelugma. The Gemara never says that liochma is a mitzvah. So it's interesting, the Rambam wrote, we know that we're familiar, the Rambam wrote a Sefer mitzvahs. He lists off what in his opinion are the 613 mitzvahs, and he divides it into two parts, which are the 248 mitzvahs asei, which are the 365 mitzvahs lois asei. And the Ramban deletes about 16, 17 mitzvahs asei. From the Rambam's listing, he has a running commentary, so he has to replace them with another 16, 17 mitzvah essay. Then he deletes also about 16, 17 of the lois essay of the Rambam, has to replace it with others. So one of the mitzvah essay that the Ramban is replacing, one of the mitzvah essay that the Ramban does count, which the Rambam failed to count, is v'orisa shavetz haras lachem liochla. It's a mitzvah to eat perishvi. So when you read the Ramban in the Sefer Mitzvahs, you get the impression that he means that it's not only Alav habo mechlala say, as the Gemara says, liochlo v'lo lemelugmo v'lo lehepsid v'lo leschori, you're not allowed to do A, B, C, D, you're not allowed to do all these things. From the Ramban, you get the impression that it's a mitzvah to eat perishvis. Take, for example, on Pesach night when we eat the matzah, so we say, ha-moitzi lech manoros, and we say, ha-shek rishonu b'mitzvot tzil tzivon, v'alachilos matzah, well, that person is a kohen. And a farmer gave him truma, he gave him grain, he gave him wheat. So what's the kohen going to do with the wheat? So he grinds it up and he makes flour. Then he bakes bread, or he bakes cake and cookies. So when the kohen is about to eat the trumadiki bread or cake or cookies, so he says two brachas. First he says, bari mini mezodis, ha-motzi lech min haaretz. And then he says, the bichas ha-mitzvah, shekirishan, b'kdushosu shalaharon, v'tzivan, v'alachidos truma. One is not a kohen and he performs a mitzvah, he put on talis and tefillin. So we don't say kedushana b'kedushas u'shalar, we say asher kedushana b'mitzvah yisav, it's ivano. But if a kohen does a mitzvah that's miyuchad only for kohanim, like when they go to duchen, so they say asher kedushana b'kedushas u'shalar, it's ivano l'vach, it's am yisrael b'yavo. So the Rambam writes on the last page in Hilchas Trumas, when a kohen is about to eat the truma, so first he says bar pihuetz, bar piadoma, bar minimizaynes, hamoitzi, whatever the bichas ha-nenen is. And then he says, "Hashem Kedushanu b'kedushas u'shalar v'tzivanu alachilas ha'tshuma." So some achrayim say you get the impression from the Ramban, even though he doesn't write it explicitly, that when one would be eating perishvias, he would taka say two brachas, one bracha on a banana. I remember last Shemitah 7 years ago, so I visited Eretz Yisrael in the middle of the year, and one of the yeshivas, one of the Rambanim, gave me a banana at lunch, and he said, "This has kedushas perishvias. You should have a mind to be yotze the mitzvah." So some achrayim want to say, according to the Ramban, you should say two brachas, bari pri ha'adoma on the banana, then say, asher kedushanu b'mitzvos v'tzivanu alachilas perishvis. We're not so convinced that the Ramban would say a bracha, so we're not so convinced any other Rishon agrees with the Ramban, so we don't say the bracha. But that's what some Gedolim want to suggest, that there's a mitzvah saseh, according to the Ramban, not just a lav habo mechlal saseh on schorah and hefsid and melugma and menachas, but there's a kiyam saseh as well.
Even though the bracha is not mentioned in the Gemara, it's not there that you find in the Gemara, you still, some say it, still say it?
Yeah.
Because as long as it has a shirk, you turn it, that's sufficient?
Yeah, we do recite brachas that don't exist in the Gemara. We do recite brachas. There are a couple of brachas that don't say in the Gemara. We assume that that's the nusach to be recited whenever you're performing a mitzvah. Yeah. The bracha on Lichbenshin doesn't say in the Gemara. Tosfos has two opinions. So we assume you do say bracha. In fact, we say bench lich. Built in that you're benching lich. You're saying the bracha. The other day in Tosfos wouldn't have such a concept of bench lich. They hold your light by mamad lich. You don't say a bracha. We assume it's a mitzvah, midrabbanon. So you got to say a bracha. We figure out the bracha on our own.
When were the last brachas created? When the nusach, the last brachas, was the Rishonim make brachas?
We assume that it's like the Anshei Knesset HaGedolah set up like a computer system, what the text of a bracha shekin Rishonim b'mitzvah b'tzivano, and then you fill in, you type in whatever mitzvah you're performing, and then the computer prints out how the bracha should end. The beginning is Baruch Atah Hashem Kenem Echad Hashem Malcha Hashem Hashem Sarsav Tzivanu. Then the computer will tell you the nusach. So each mitzvah you figure out whatever the bracha should be. They didn't have to be misaken in each and every individual mitzvah. They are misaken in the principle of Kol HaMitzvahs Kulam Baruch Alei Moav Elas Yosem, and then you proceed accordingly. You figure out on your own what the bracha should be. The Morgan Avraham came up with an Einfeld that the later Poskim disagree. If I move into an apartment and I put on mezuzahs, so then it's a bracha shekereshanu b'mesos b'tzivanu l'kvaya mezuzah. So what if I move into an apartment and there are mezuzahs? So you don't say any bracha. The mezuzahs are there. So the Magen Avraham has a chiddush which we do not follow. He thinks that you recite a bracha shekereshanu b'mitzvah b'tzivanu l'dur b'abayi sheyesh bo mezuzah. So the later Achrayim disagree, and they think that they're not so convinced that if you put that into the computer, it's going to spit out that the nusach bracha. So there they disagree. But in principle, the Magen Avraham is right. That you make up if you stumble upon another mitzvah, so you just figure out what the nusach habracha is, and you say. Now in Shnas Hashmita, there is another pasuk that says in Parshas Mishpatim, "V'hashviyis tishmetenu unetashto." That means that all the pears that grow during Shnas Hashmita, you should treat the owner of the farm should treat it as if it's hefker. So he has to let everybody come in to eat the pears. Yeah, he can be a wise guy and say, yeah, the pears are hefker, but I'm going to lock the doors on the farm, you can't go in. So the Gemara says, you can't do that. His farm is also hefker. Not that people have a right to come in and make a picnic in his farm. People have a right to come into his farm in order to get the pears. Once they already took all the pears, then he can lock the gates. Or let's say it's a time of the day. He doesn't want people walking in all the time. They're going to ruin his whole, the rest of the farm. Too many people. So he has certain hours when they should come in to pick the pears. Okay, can do that. The farm is hefker with respect to everybody having the right to eat the pears. So there was a major dispute in the 1500s. There weren't so many Jewish farmers during the days of Rabbi Yosef Karo. The Jewish community was busy writing Shulchan Aruch and Chodaydi and Kabbalah, Svarim. They were busy doing more important things. There were hardly any Jewish farmers at that time. In fact, some of the Gedolim in that time say that there was a vertel that fruit only grows on a non-Jewish farm. If the Jews would have a farm, nothing would grow. It's not true. There were a couple of Jewish farmers, but there weren't too many. So the Rabbi Yosef Karo had as a member of his beden the Mabit. And he had many... Rav Moshe Detrani. So he had many issues where he disagreed. They disagreed with each other. So they had a major dispute regarding this mitzvah of treating the Peri Shviyas as Hefker. So Rabbi Yosef Karo was of the opinion that Hashviyas Pirish Amilas and Chumash. How do you translate? How does the Malama teach in school? How does he teach the Chumash? So they had an argument on the level of the rice. It's very strange. Tanoim, Rishonim, Achronim. Until the days of Rabbi Yosef Karo. No one discussed the topic. Very wild. So Rabbi Yosef Karo was of the opinion that the peiros are not hefker automatically. It's a mitzvah on the balasada to declare them as hefker. Hashviyas tishmetenu unetashta. You should declare the peiros as hefker. So if the farm belongs to a non-Jew, it's not from the Sheva Mitzvah's Ben Yinoach. So he's not, the non-Jew is not obligated to declare the peiros as hefker. So they won't be hefker. If it's besod shel nachri, it won't be hefker. Even if it's besod shel Yisrael, up until the time that he declares it as hefker, it won't be hefker. It's a mitzvah on him that he should declare it as hefker. And the Mabit disagreed. The Mabit called this, he used the term that appears in the Gemara, he declared that this is Afkaita de Malka. The king, means the Melech Macha Amlochem, the Rabban Shalom declared that it's Hefker. When the Pasuk says, Vashviyas Tishmetenu Unetashto, what it means is that you should observe the din, you should act in accordance with the din that the Rabban Shalom has declared your parents as Hefker. So because the Mabit was of the opinion that it's not a mitzvah on the Baal HaSoda to declare it as Hefker, Perishvies become Hefker automatically. So step number two, he was of the opinion that if Paris fruits and vegetables grow on the farm of a non-Jew, so he felt that there's Kedushas Paris Shvius automatically on anything that grows in Shnas HaShmita and Eretz Yisrael, even if it belongs to a non-Jew. Rabbi Yosef Kar disagreed with that also. He felt that Kedusha, there's a passage in the Sifra that takes a stand on this. Taurus Kahanim talks about this issue. Is there a Kedushas Paris Shvius on Paris that grow, let's say Loch Lavlala Hepsid, Loch Lavlala Menuglov, Loch Lavlala Menachas, all the dinim are Kedushas Perishvies. So Rabbi Yosef Kar was of the opinion that Kedushas Perishvies only achal, only take effect if the farm is owned by a Jewish person. If the farm is not owned by a non-Jew, there's no Kedushas Perishvies. And the Mabit disagreed. So the Psak HaMekubal in Eretz Yisrael since the 1500s, since the days of the Beis Yosef, was like Rabbi Yosef Kar. In fact, he writes in his Chuvis that this member of his Bezdin was tumbling. The Mabit disagreed with him. He disagreed on quite a few issues, but everything else they functioned together very well. So he called a conference of all of the Rabbonim in Tzfas. Most of the Rabbonim at that time lived in Tzfas. Hardly anybody lived in Yerushalayim. I think we once spoke about it because, first of all, the water was not healthy. The water in Yerushalayim was full of bugs. The bugs were kosher bugs, but they're not healthy. So there was no issue of kashrus, but it wasn't healthy. So the water in Tzfas was healthier. And then number two, they were hoping to be mekabel pnei HaMashiach. That the Gemara, I think we once spoke about it last year, that the Gemara says in the end of Maseches Rosh Hashanah, and the Rambam quotes this passage from the Gemara, that the Bezdin HaGadol will reconvene in the last location where they met. So the Gemara says, Eser Golis Golsa Sanhedrin, at the end of the period of the second Beis HaMikdash, so the Hedrin left the Lishkas HaGozes, the official office, the official location in the Beis HaMikdash, and they went to Achanus, another location in the Harabais, then later on they went to Yerushalayim, then they went to Usha, then they went to Shvarim, then they went to Tzipori, then they went to Tveri, then they're floating back and forth, different places, then they conked out. So all those locations are in the Galil. Tzipori and Usha and Shvarim, all these places are somewhere in the Galil. So the Gemara says, just like when the Bezdin HaGadol used to meet in the Beis HaMikdash. So they went home at 5 o'clock, and they ate home, and then they came back the next morning. They reconvened the next morning. They went home at 5 o'clock, they came back the next morning. Every day they came back. So here there's a slight pause. The last time they convened was somewhere over there in Tveria, and there was a pause for 1800, 1900 years, and then they're going to reconvene. That's why when they just organized 2 years ago, they organized the Sanhedrin, so they met in Tveria. And every time they had in the newspapers that 71 Rabbanim gathered together, and they convened the Sanhedrin. So they convened in Tveri, because the Rambam quotes the Gemara, that the Sanhedrin, the Gemara has a tradition based on the Pasuk in Novi, that the Sanhedrin will reconvene in the same location where they were the last time. And then the Gemara says in Erevin, Hine necho shalech al chayim esele ya Novi lefnei bo yom Hashem agor Allah ha-noira, that Eliyo ha-Novi will come the day before Mashiach, he will come to the Bezdin HaGadol, to the Sanhedrin, to announce that tomorrow the Melech HaMashiach will come. He will identify who the Melech HaMashiach is. So the Gemara says that the Sanhedrin will reconvene in the last place that they met, Tveria, somewhere over there in the Galil. So they wanted to be there where the action is going to take place. So they wanted to be Mekabel Pnei Eliyo HaNavi. That the Gemara, we talk in Yiddish about being Mekabel Pnei Melech HaMashiach. The Gemara never talks about the Kabbalah's point for Melech HaMashiach. The Gemara talks about to be Mekabel Pnei Eliyo HaNavi. And the day after, we'll be Mekabel Pnei Melech HaMashiach. So they wanted to be Mekabel Mashiach. So they're hoping and praying Mashiach would come. So that's why, that's the religious reason why. The other reason why is the health-wise. It wasn't safe to live in Yerushalayim. The water was contaminated. But the other reason why they moved to Tzfas as opposed to Yerushalayim was because they were hoping they'd be able to be Mekabel Pnei Melech HaMashiach. So the Beis Yosef writes that he convened, he got all of the Rabbanim of Tzfas to gather together, and they discussed this issue, and they voted that everyone should follow his opinion, the Beis Yosef's opinion, that there's no Kedushas Perishvis and Beres Dagru B'Shus HaNochri, and they made a cherem that you're not allowed to be machmer like the Mabit. That's what he writes. In fact, he quotes in the Kesef Mishnah, and it's also in the Chuvas Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, that there was another issue also in agricultural mitzvahs Hatlis Baretz, a dispute between the Mabit and the Beis Yosef. There is a machlokes, the Rambam and Tosfos. There is a din that to be mafresh trumas and maisvis on the pears that grow in Eretz Yisrael is only if it grew, if the farm belonged to a Jew, and the one who owned the pears when they did the miruach, when they removed all the psolas and they put it up in a big pile, if it was miruach b'shus ha-Yisrael. But if it grew b'shus ha-Nochri, or the miruach was miruach hakam, it belonged to an anju at the time that they were removing all the psolas and packaging it, so then Minatora does no obligation to be mafish, chumas, and maisis. So in the days of the Tanoim, they were wise guys. They were balabatim, who had big farms. They didn't want to give away over 20%. They have to give away 2% of everything to the Kohanim, and then 10% Maiserishin to the Levim, then 9% as the Maisersheni or the Maiserani. That's a lot. You're giving away 21% of everything. So they made a trick. They made a harama. That was the original Mechira. So they had a farm, and they grew everything, and then they would sell it to a... They got a Nanju who would work with them, Beshutfus. They sold all of the Tvua to a Nanju. They had the Nanju do the Miruach, and then they bought it back from the non Jews. So strictly speaking, they were potter from Afroshes, Trumas, and Maisis. So the Gemara says, in Menoches, they made Xeres Balikis. Balikis are these wealthy farmers who are pulling off the shtick. They're selling it to, if you have a little farm, so you're not going to make so much money anyway. But if you have a big farm and you have millions of dollars worth of tvuot, so you're giving away 21% of millions of dollars, a chaptan afkemina. So the Balikisim, the wealthy businessmen, used to do like this. So the Tanai made Xeres that it doesn't help. Even if you sold it to a Nochri, and it was the Miruch was done, Bishus HaNochri, it's still chayv to be mafresh Chumas and Maisis. So Tosis is of the opinion, even if you didn't do with such a haroma, let's say a non-Jew has a farm, an Arab has a farm in Eretz Yisrael, everything, it grew by the Nochri, and he did everything. So Tosis is of the opinion that Midrabbanon, you chayv to be mafresh Chumas and Maisis. And the Rambam says, no. If it grew Bishus HaNochri, the Havuah Shlish, the Gidul, and the Miruach, everything belonged to the Nochri. They didn't make a Gzera Derabon. It's only if it grew in your issues. If it was owned by a Jew and then he's pulling the shtick and he sells it to the guy and then he buys it back, so then the Rabbanon don't want you to get away with this Harama. But if everything, the Rabbanon's opinion is, if everything grew B'Shus HaNochri, so then they're even the Rabbanon, you're not chayv to be mafish, chumas, and maisis. So Sfardim usually follow the Rambam, and Ashkenazim usually follow the Balei HaTosfos. At that time in Eretz Yisrael, there were no Ashkenazim. All the Rabbanim, all the Balabatim, everybody was Sfardim at that time. So they always followed the Rambam's opinion. They're not chayv to be mafish, chumas, and maisis. So the Mabit came along. He thought that you should be machmer like Tosfos. You should be mafish, chumas, and maisis, even on peres that you buy from Arabs. There hardly were any Jewish farmers at that time. No one was pulling any shtick then. No one was doing a haram. They bought the peres from the Arabs. The Jews were busy writing svarim, and the Arabs were busy planting farms. So they were buy from the Arabs. So the Mabit thought you should be machmer. So the Kesef Mishnah writes, he gathered together all the Rabbanim and Tzvas, and they pasken like him, like the Beis Yosef, that you're not mafresh chumas and maisis, that the Rambam is considered more de Asra in Eretz Yisrael, because they were all Svardim, so they always followed the Rambam. And they made a cherem that no one's allowed to be machmer. They made a cherem against the Mabit. No one's allowed to be machmer like the Balei HaTosfos. That's in the Kesef Mishnah, in Perek Aleph and Hilchas Trumas. That's what they write. The Vilna Goyen, at one point in his life, bid his wife and his children farewell, and he went on his way to go to Eretz Yisrael. And then, for some unknown reason, he came back home, and no one knows why he never went to Eretz Yisrael. So some guessed that on his way to go to Eretz Yisrael, he stopped off in Amsterdam. I think that's where the boat used to go. The boat went from Amsterdam to Eretz Yisrael. So in Amsterdam, he had access to a whole big library of Svarim that he didn't have in Vilna. So that's when he came upon this Tshuva, Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi, where he quotes, Rabbi Tzal Ashkenazi lived in Eretz Yisrael also at that time, I think. So he writes that they made a cherem The Beis Yosef made a cherem with all the rabbanim. You're not allowed to be machmir like the Bali Ataisa. The Vilna Gaon was an Ashkenazi. The Vilna Gaon was from Vilna, Litvak. So he didn't want to follow the Rambam's opinions. He wanted to go follow the Bali Ataisa opinions. So he was planning to go to Eretz Yisrael. Also, there were no Jewish farmers in the 1700s. Probably, probably no Jewish farmers at all.
They allowed
to
own land?
I don't know. Could be that not even. So he planned to go to Eretz Yisrael to be Mafresh Shumas and Mises. What then? He was going to follow Taisis. But he didn't know, that's how some suggest. He wasn't aware that they made a cherem, that you're not allowed to be Mafresh. So when he went to Amsterdam and he had access to the library and he saw the Chus of Sal Ashkenazi, so then he went back home because he didn't want to violate the cherem, but he didn't want to follow the kula of the Beis Yosef. So that's what some say. So that's really hard to believe, because even if he didn't have Chus of Sal Ashkenazi, but he had a Rambam in Vilna, and he had a case of Mishnah on the side of the Rambam, and the case of Mishnah quoted this cherem. And Perek Aleph in the Chizkiyahu, I know, I don't have a Chus of Sal Ashkenazi, they have in the library. But then the Rambam on the side of the Rambam says this. So that's probably not the reason why. They give all kinds of conjectures, all kinds of reasons why.
What the Mavid eat? What did he eat? What did he eat? Mavid.
I don't know. What did he do? At home. Yeah. He didn't want to violate him. I don't know what he did. I don't know. So they had two disputes. The Beis Yosef, Rabbi Yosef Kara, and Rav Moshe Ditrani had two disagreements. Regarding Perish Shviz. One disagreement was that Perish that grow on a non-Jewish farm, do they have Kedushas Perish Shviz or not? So the Mabit said that yes. And the Beis Yosef said it's not so, based on a passage in the Sifro, in the Torah Skanim on Parshas Behar. And the Beis Yosef writes in his Shuvahs that they made a cherem, well, he gathered all the Rabbanim together, made a cherem, you're not allowed to be machmer like the Mabit. That was the practice in Eretz Yisrael from the 1500s until the mid-1900s. Then we introduced the Chazon Ish, comes on the scene. So the Chazon Ish was convinced that the Mabit was right. And he writes in his Sefer that the Mabit was greater in learning than the Beis Yosef. I have no way of measuring. That's what he claims. He says the Mabit is considered much greater than Rabbi Yosef Karo. Whenever there's a dispute, we should always place our money... We should always place our bets on the Mabit. So he said you have to be machma like the Mabit. So even if you buy perishvias that grew on an Arab farm, he didn't want to rely on the head to Mechira Bechlal. So if you buy perish from an Arab, so you're still not allowed to throw it out in the garbage. You have to put it on the side and you shmeet the bag and wait till it gets spoiled. So all over in Eretz Yisrael, they did not follow the Chazon Ish. But in Bnei Brak, in the outskirts of Bnei Brak a little bit, so they follow the Chazon Ish's Chumra to follow the Mabit. The rest of the Eretz they hold, you're not allowed to, because they made a cherem in the 1500s. You're not allowed to follow the Mabit. So that was the one dispute between the Mabit and the Beis Yosef. And now, because the Chazon Ish came from the 1950s on, he was there, right? He died in 1950s.
What did he do with the
cherem? He ignored the cherem. I don't know. He ignored the cherem. So Vilna Gaon made a cherem against Hasidim. We get along with Hasidim. Somehow we're ignoring half of us are Hasidim, no? So we have ignored the Chesed. I don't know. So that was the one machloikis, the Mabit and the Beis Yosef. So the minik for centuries and all over Eretz was like Rabbi Yosef Kar. There's no Kedushas Peris Shviz and Peris that grew on a non-Jewish farm. And now, the last 50 years, in Bnei Brak and the surroundings, they followed the Chazon Ish, who felt we should follow the Mabit. And the other issue... The other issue was also the Mabit felt that whatever has Kedushas Perish Shviz, whether it grew on a Jewish farm, non-Jewish farm, whatever has Kedushas Perish Shviz automatically becomes Hefker. So he felt that even the Peris that grow on a non-Jewish farm become Hefker. We'll soon explain. The non-Jew can lock the door. He doesn't have to observe what it says in the Torah. But according to the Torah, it becomes Hefker. We'll soon explain why it's relevant to us. The Arab is not going to let me go. And pick off the Paris. And Rabbi Yosef Kara said, no, it doesn't become Hefker automatically. It's not what we would call Afkai to the Malka. The farmer has a mitzvah to be Mafka. What's an Afkamina? The Arab is going to kill me if I'm going to go steal his berries. So the Shailas, they're all working on the assumption that the Paris that grow during Shnas HaShmita, you don't have to be Mafrish, Chumas, and Marises because it's Hefker. One could disagree with the whole premise. One could say, the Torah tells us that the first 2 years of the whatever grows in Eretz Yisrael, you have a mitzvah to be mafish shumas and maisers, and every year you have to know where you're holding. So the first 2 years of the Shemitah cycle, first you set aside 2% as truma, Then you set aside 10% as Maaser Rishon. Then you set aside 9%, 10% of what's left is going to be 9%. The whole thing is Maaser Sheni. The third year you start Mafrish Truma Gedolah Maaser Rishon Maaser Oni. The fourth year, the fifth year, repeat of the first 2 years, Mafrish Truma Gedolah Maaser Rishon Maaser Sheni. And then the sixth year is a repeat of the third year, Mafrish Maaser Oni. The seventh year, there's no din what he's supposed to be Mafrish. So whatever goes the seventh year, there's no din of Hafrash at all. It's not Tevel. It's only Tevel. You're not allowed to eat Tevel. It's only Tevel if there's an obligation to be Mafrish. Only an obligation if you know what year you're holding by. So years 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, we know what you know. Seventh year, the Torah never says boom. Doesn't say it's a nish. Nish is nish. The parents grow in America. You don't have to be Mafrish, so it's not Tevel. So one could have argued the point and said, whatever goes in Shemitah, you don't have to be Mafrish. They were both assuming not so. They're both assuming, that's how we assume halacha l'maaseh, even though in the yeshivas there are those who like to disagree with this premise, but the poskim assume halacha l'maaseh, like Rabbi Yosef Kara and the Mabit, that the reason why perish shviyas are potter from trumas and maaseh is because it's hefker. So Rabbi Yosef Kara says, Rabbi Yosef Kara's only opinion, it doesn't become hefker automatically, it's a mitzvah on the farmer to be mafkerit. So what if you have a farmer who's a wise guy? He doesn't, he's not religious, he's not orthodox, he doesn't want to be mafkir. So we'll say your parents are tevel. If he's not mafkir, it's going to be tevel. The only reason why it's not tevel is because he's mafkir. Whatever is hefkir, the Mishnah says, whatever is hefkir, it's not chayv and trumas and maaseh. So it was a machlokes, the Mabit and the Beis Yosef. What about parents that grew the Rishus HaNochri? Are they chayv and trumas and maaseh? So the Mabit held Lishitoso. Mabit held whatever grows on the farm of a non-Jew, you have to be mafish from the Maisa. The Beis Yosef made a chem, you're not allowed to be machma like him. But he held whatever grows on the farm of a non-Jew, you have to be mafish from the Maisa son. But he held over here, Shnas HaShmita, whatever grows anywhere in Eretz Yisrael has Kedushas Perish. Everything is automatically hefter. So nothing is chayv in Trumas and Maisa. And Rabbi Yosef Karo was of the opinion, no. It's only hefker if you're mafkerit. So whatever grew b'shus anochri, it was never mafkerit.
Do they have machlokes on year 3 and year 4 on the fear or lack of fear of the mafkerit trumas mice was from
what grows by non Jew? Right, right.
Does anybody have such a machlokes?
That was a machlokes between Rabbi Yosef Karo. Yeah, that's what he mentioned before. If everything grew b'shus anochri and then the nochri processed it and everything, then he sells it to me. So the Mabit said that Tosis holds on such a case, he chayv to be mafrish mid the Rabbana.
Let's say he doesn't sell it to
me. So how do I get to eat it? Wait a minute, I'm invited to eat by the non-Jew.
Yeah.
No, then you're not chayv. Only if he sells it to me, so the Mabit says, we follow Tosis, even though he's a Sephardi, said we should follow Tosis, that there's a gzera mid the Rabbana. Yosef Kar got the Rabbanan to make a cherem. You're not allowed to be mafrish trumas mice. Only if it grew b'shus Yisrael and he did a stunt and he sold it to the Nochri before the Miruach in order to pater himself. He used the Harama. But if no one did a Harama, the farm belonged to a non-Jew. So Rabbi Yosef Kar said it's not chayv at all. So here's the Shaila in Shnas HaShmita.
But Shnas HaShmita is Midrabbanan anyway.
Okay.
So what kind of a hefker is there? If according to Yosef Karo, that's an Ashton, means that he has to be mafkerit, so I could understand. But if he's not mafkerit, what is it? Bezna mafkerit? Is it hefker, bezna hefker? Kind of thing. It's only midrabanan. What kind of a hefker is there?
Yeah.
But the Araisa belongs to the Sefer. It belongs to
the Mabit says, when Shemitah was the Araisa, so it's Avkaita Namalka, the Rabban Shalom in person was mafkerit.
Right.
When Shemitah is midrabanan, so the bezna is mafkerit.
Bezna.
Yeah.
Like
and Rabbi Yosef Kara says no. When Shemitah was there, I said the Rabban Shlom was not mafkirid. He commanded the farmer to be mafkirid. And if he's a wise guy farmer, he doesn't want to. So he doesn't become hefker. He has a mitzvah to be mafkirid. And if it grew and he wasn't mafkirid, then it will be chayv in trumas and maaseh. So here's the shaila: if a Jew, many Jewish farmers in Eretz Yisrael do rely on hefker mechir, so they sell a farm to a non-Jew, but the whole selling it to the non-Jew, the whole thing is a haroma. It's not that it grew on the farm, it's not that this farm really belonged to a non-Jew. The farm is really ours, and we're doing a harama, we're doing a legal fiction selling to the non-Jew. So the Gemara said, whenever the Jew was doing a harama, even though it should be potter because of the fact that the miruach was done by a non-Jew, they slapped on us a chiv hafrasha mid the rabbanan. So here, the whole selling of the farm to the non-Jew is a harama. So according to Rabbi Yosef Karo, if the farm belongs to a non-Jew, it's not hefker. the Nadra doesn't have an obligation to be mafkirit. And it doesn't become hefker automatically. So he says, whatever you buy from Heta Mechira is chayv in Trumas and Maisers. So that's the shadow that someone raised last week. So what are you going to be mafkirish? What are you going to do? So first you give 2% as Truma Gedola, then you give 10% as Maiser Rishon. Then what are you going to do? You're going to be mafkirish Maiser Sheni or Maiser Rani? And the first and the second years of the Shemitah cycle, and the fourth and the fifth years, you give Maiser Sheni. The third year and the sixth year, the Torah tells us to give Maiser Rani. The seventh year, the Torah doesn't tell you what to do. So what do? Are you mafkirish Maiser Sheni and Maiser Rani? So some treat it as a suffer. In other words, you set aside Maiser, 9% as Maiser, and you say, either this is Maiser Sheni or Maiser Rani. So if it's Maiser Sheni, I'm going to be poded, because you can't bring the Maiser Sheni to Yerushalayim today to eat. There's no Mizbeach Banui. So you're not permitted to eat Maiser Sheni, Mizman Sheni, Mizbeach Banui. So we're all poded Maiser Sheni. So you poded Misafek, and then after being poded, then you have to give it away to the Aniyim. Okay, so that's what some would do. Mafresh the second, the 9%, and they say this is either Maiser Sheni or Maiser Rani. And others discuss the topics, and some develop the following theme. They say, basically, this is the question, is this true? Basically, after Maiser Rishon, you give 2% Truma Gedola, 10% Maiser Rishon, and then you mafresh 10% of what's left, which is 9% of the sum total. Basically, you're always mafresh Maiser Sheni. The third year and the sixth year, that's a Yotze Min HaKlal. The seventh year is not a Yotze Min HaKlal. So you fall back on the basic klal. So the basic klal, why does that become the basic klal? Because it's 4 out of 6 years. So the third year is the Yotze Min HaKlal, and the sixth year is the Yotze Min HaKlal. And the fact that, so basically the rule is that you always mafresh Maiser Sheni. So Nishnas HaShmita, if it grew by a farm of an Arab, and he doesn't have a mitzvah to be mafker, so it doesn't become hefker, so then you should be mafresh Maiser Sheni. So that's, others disagree, and they quote the Gemara, it says in a few places, when the Oile Bavel came back and they returned the time of Shiva Sin, days of Ezra Nehemiah, they came back to Eretz Yisrael. So the Kedusha Saaretz that was created in the days of Yeshua Ben Nun, we paskin halacha at the time of Churban by Rishon, when the Nebuchadnezzar destroyed the first place of Hamikdash, so the Kedusha Saaretz was batla. The Kedusha was only Kitchel Shaita temporarily, for a few centuries, from the days of Yeshua Ben Nun till the time of the Churban by Rishon, but like Kitchel Azilava. During the 70 years of Golas Babel, there was no Kedusha Saaretz. Came Ezra and Nehemiah, and they endowed Eretz Yisrael with a second time around, the Kedusha Shniya. The first one is called Kedusha Rishona, that was made in the days of Yeshua Ben Nun, after the Kibush Vechilu. We spoke last week, the 15th year. The Kedusha was completed in the first 14 years. In the 15th year, whatever grew was Chayv in Mitzvah Sakhli Yisbarat. And then the Kedusha Shniya is what's relevant today. So Eretz Yisrael is much smaller. The Oilem Mitzrayim, in the days of Yeshua Ben Nun, when the Oilem Mitzrayim came to Eretz Yisrael, they endowed it with Kedusha. So it was a bigger area, it was a broader area. And the days of the Olei Bavel, it was a smaller area. So the Gemara says it was smaller because the Jews didn't live in this bigger area. And number two, it was smaller. They made a political decision. Shemitah was always a difficulty. The Bais Rishon were chari because they didn't observe Shemitah. And they knew it's going to be a hardship. So they made a decision, the Gemara says, the hinichum, there were certain areas that they left out, that even though Jews did live there, they decided they're not going to endow that with the Kedusha, in order that shouldn't be a problem in Shemitah. Kedesha yismucho aleim anim b'shviz. The anim should have what to rely on. So what do you mean they're going to rely on that? So the Mefarshim on the Gemara say that you give Maisa Oni there. Whatever grows in Beit Shan, there are, not the whole Beit Shan Valley, there are areas in Beit Shan which they never gave Kedusha Shniya to, but it's in the middle of Eretz Yisrael, so you chayv to be mafresh mid the Rabbanon, you're not mechayv to be mafresh mid the Torah. So Shnas HaShmita, the Gemara says, you mafresh Maisa Oni. So the Gemara said, Beferish, you mafresh Maisa Oni. So that's what many poskim hold, that Bizman and Zen, the Shnas HaShmita, when you mafresh, and whatever grew by the non-Jew, you should be mafresh Maisa Oni. But it's a big machloikis, but it's supposed to be Maisa Sheni Maisa Oni. So some are mafresh, misofik, they say, they take out 9%, they say, we're not sure whether this is Maisa Sheni Maisa Oni. If it's Maiser Sheni, we put aside some money and we're paid to the Maiser Sheni. And if it's Maiser Rani, we're supposed to distribute it to the Aniyim.
Why should you be giving to Maaser? Because according to him, the payer of growing in Rishon doesn't offer.
Right. The Beis Yosef thinks whatever grew in an area and a farm that belonged to a non-Jew legitimately, the Arab owns this farm. I didn't pull any shtick. The Arab owns the farm, so the Beis Yosef says you're not mechuyev to be mafrish trumas and ma'aseh. We follow the Rambam, and he made a cheirim that no one's allowed to be machmer on that. But over here, the whole selling to the Arabs for the Shnas Hashmit is a shtick. The whole thing is a harama. It really didn't belong, for the last 6 years, it didn't belong to the Arabs.
But the pear itself are grown from Mehachalato at Sofo in the Rishud of an
Upper, though. Right,
whereas
right.
In the other case of Haramayim, it's already grown in the Rishud of the Yisrael, and then only later am I giving to the Rishud of an
Upper. Right, right. So the Beis Yosef is following the Rambam, who says the only time they made this Chumra Midirabbanon, that you have to be Mafrish, Chumas and Maisis, and what grew Bishus Anachri, what you buy from a non Jew is. If you're employing a haroma, see here you are employing a haroma. The whole selling, usually employing a haroma is only if it grew on my farm and I sell it to the nanja before the miruch, then I buy it back after the miruch. So that's the haroma. Here the selling of the whole farm for the Shemitah year is a haroma. So that's why. So that's an issue in Eretz Yisrael. Exactly how are you supposed to be mafrish chumas and maizes?
Are you saying that the gzera on the Balei Kisa is really a svar that applies again, and that it's haroma to sell?
The haram is that they sell it to the non Jew right before you're about to do the miruah. Here the haram is he sold the whole farm to the non Jew. The whole selling of the farm is a haram.
Yeah, but there was for personal people to avoid paying taxes. Here it's the whole country.
Avoid hafrashas, trumas, and maisos. You're selling to the non Jew before miruah, then you buy it right back. Just in order to be parted from Trumas and Maizes.
People who are gaining there are just those individuals, those rich businessmen, the landowners,
right.
Are trying to avoid taxes. Here it's the whole country when they're selling to...
In order to avoid the din of Shemitah. Here it's also Arama to avoid the whole observance of Shemitah.
In order to keep the state going.
Okay, but still, it's a Haram.
It's not individuals avoiding taxes.
It's a good point. I don't know, it's a good point, but that's... But that's the practice. That's the practice.
The Jews that start to the goyim, are the Jews still working the land, or are the goyim working?
No, the Jews that sell to the goyim, the Arab who buys it doesn't work the land. So most of the farms, the Jewish farmers who worked it for the last 6 years are working on the farm. The original hefter that Rabbi Yitzchak Yochanan gave, he wrote, he's only mekel on the condition that they'll get non-Jews to do the melechas hakarka. So that's not it's very rare that anybody lives up to that condition. We spoke about that last week. Do I lower the level of the prohibition if I have it on Shabbos? If I turn on the lights on Shabbos, I violated Chil Shabbos Menatar. If I ask a non-Jew to turn on the lights, it's only prohibited midirabon. So if I plant a tree in Shnas HaShmiteh, I violated Nisa Deraisa. If I ask a non-Jew to plant the tree, is that also an Aver Menatar? They say no. Since I had a non-Jew do the dirty work for me, so maybe it's only also midirabon. So on the assumption that Shemitah is the same as Shabbos, that if you ask a non-Jew, it lessens the Aveira, it's only with the Rabbanon. So that's what Yitzchak Yochanan said, that with the Het HaMechira, you should have a non-Jew do the Melechas HaKarka. And others disagree, they said, what do you gain by having a non-Jew? Having a non-Jew do the Melechas HaKarka is still an Issa Deraisa on the Baal HaSodah. He's in violation of the Esev, of Shav Sahar, Shabbos LaShem. So that's in most of the farms where they rely on Het Mechira, they don't have a non-Jew do the Avodas HaKarka. And even if they would have a non-Jew, it has nothing to do with the non-Jew to whom they sold the field. It's just an official sale, and he has nothing to do with what's going on the farm, the whole Shnas HaShmiteh. They get some other Philippine workers to do the work on the farms. Let me close with this. One of the issues that we face when it comes to Shnas HaShmiteh is the sukkah is following Shnas HaShmiteh. Are we permitted to use an esrog from Eretz Yisrael? What's the problem? So there'll be a few problems we'll discuss maybe next week, believe that, but we'll concentrate on one issue. So there is a Taisvis that Daf Yomi just finished Yevamos 2 months ago. So there is a Taisus on the last daf in Yevamos. The last Taisus in Maseches Yevamos quotes the Rabbeinu Tam, who interprets the Gemara as saying that if I have a farm in Eretz Yisrael and I don't observe the din of making an hefker, I lock the gates and I don't let anybody take it, so I violated the mitzvah of Hashvi'is Tishmetenu and Etashna. So we call those parents Mishumer. I locked the gates and I guarded my fruits and I didn't let anybody out. So later on, I pluck off the oranges and I have them in my house. So someone comes to visit me. So the Rabbi Natam interprets in the Gemara, I'm not allowed to eat those oranges and no one's allowed to eat the oranges. Mishumer is also b'achil. Mishumer is also b'achil. That's how Rabbi Natam read the Gemara. Most of the Rishonim disagree with the Rabbi Natam. So there is a Gemara in, so the farmers who have esrig orchards in Eretz Yisrael, so it'll be a big hefsed moment. If they'll open up the gates and they'll let everybody grab all the esrig, they won't make a penny during Shnas HaShmita. So they rely, many of them rely on the het mechira. They sell their orchard to a non-Jew, and then they keep the gates locked.
And the best thing too,
Oh, it's a bezna. We'll have to get to that. We'll have to discuss that. That's maybe Belinetta next week. We'll talk some.
2 weeks.
Okay. In 2 weeks, yeah. If people will still be interested in maybe coming out of your ears already. But if people will still be interested in hearing about Shemitah, so we'll have to tie up a lot of loose ends that we left. So the farmers who have the Esroigim orchards and they don't want to lose $1 million in the Shnas HaShemitah, a lot of them, that's the whole Parnassah for the whole year. They just sell Esroigim and then they live on this till next year. The next Sukkot. So if the farmers lock the gates, so if I'm a machmir and I don't want to rely on the het mechira, maybe it's fluky, maybe it's not always gehalten. So if I want to be machmir, so it comes out that this esrig is also bachila because it's mishumer. He locked the gates and the whole het mechira is a phony baloney. It's not valid. So the Gemara says in Sukkot that an esrig is only good for the mitzvah if it's yesh bo het achila. If the esrig is also b'achila, it's not kosher, it's not a kosher esrig. The Mishnah says that esrig shall orlo. When you plant the tree, so the first 3 years, very often nothing grows. It takes a couple of years. But if something does grow, so the pears that grow the first 3 years are called orlo, and they're also b'achila, also b'ano. So the Mishnah says in Masech HaSuk and Gula Vagozal, esrig shall orlo is possible for the mitzvah. The Gemara has two explanations why. So we accept both of them. We accept the reason why, because ein bo heter achila. And the Rambam writes there in the Pirush Hamishnayos, who says it has to be kosher? Because the Chumash calls the esrog pre-Eitz Hadar. The word pre means it's kosher. The connotation of the word pre means a kosher fruit. If it's not kosher, so you can't use it. So that was the why every seventh year, coming the Sukkot of next year, years ago, it was Lebedik, so the Yiddish newspapers used to have two advertisements, one next to the other. They made money. So the Mizrahi printed an advertisement that Harav Soloveitchik said that this year, like every year, it's a mitzvah to buy an esrog from Eretz Yisrael, despite the fact that last year was a Shemitah year. And then they have next to that an advertisement. The Satmar Rebbe said that because this year is a Shnas HaShemitah, you're not allowed to buy the esrog from Eretz Yisrael because it's possible. So people always said, it's a dead giveaway. Of course, Rabbi Soloveitchik is a Zionist and he's an honorary president of the Mizrahi. Of course, he's going to say it's okay. And the Satmar Rebbe is opposed to the Medina, so of course he's going to say it's no good. It has nothing to do with Zionism. Rabbi Soloveitchik could have been an Aturi Kartanik and he would have said the same thing. Satmar Rebbe could have been a big Zionist and he could have said also the same. His perception is unrelated to the Medina. Yeah, Medina, no Medina. You're not allowed to say such a thing. The Gemara says, if you say it like that, the Gemara says there was one Bala Bas who said, I would have guessed on my own that Tana would have said that Shita because he was from Mishpachas Gerim, and of course he's going to defend the Gerim, of course he's going to fight for the rights of the Gerim. So the Mishnah says that they put the Bala Bas in Cherim to be Choshed, that a Tana, that a Tama Chocham, is such a dishonest individual that he's just going to say he's going to formulate a halachic opinion in order to support his constituency. So that's not proper. Unless you think that the Satmar Rebbe with Rav Soloveitchik were both fakers. But if you assume that they're both honest to goodness, Talmid HaChachamim, so we assume. And the truth of the matter is, it had nothing to do with their political position. It's a Shailan Din. Is this called Ein Baheter Achil? So Rav Soloveitchik said that, first of all, like the Chazon Ish points out, first of all, the majority of the Rishonim have not accepted the Rabbi Natam Shita. So the Chazon Ish, in the Sefer on Shviyas, in the Sefer on the Laws of Shemitah, writes, we don't have to paskan like the Rabbi Natam. Mishumer is Mutta Bachilo. Rab Chaim Kanievsky in Eretz Yisrael, he's the son of the Stipler. Stipler was the brother-in-law of the Chazon Ish. Rab Chaim Kanievsky is a nephew of the Chazon Ish, and he grew up in his home. Chazon Ish had no children, so he used to spend a lot of time by his uncle, by the Chazon Ish. So he published a very big Talmud Chacham. He published He just completed publishing Svarim on the whole Rambam and Hilchas Zroim, and I was publishing more. So in one of the volumes on Shemitah, so he quotes a letter that the Chazon Ish sent someone where he recommends that you should be Machmer for the Rabbeinu Tam. But in his Sefer, in the Chazon Ish's Sefer on Shvi'is, he says, you're not Mechuyev to be Machmer like the Rabbeinu Tam. It was rejected by most of the Yishamim. There is no Din HaMishum. It doesn't exist. Rabbeinu Tam misinterpreted the Gemara. So Rav Soloveitchik said, first of all, Rav HaRishonim have not agreed with the Rabbeinu Tam. And he said, secondly, even if one were to assume like the Rabbeinu Tam that the Esroyim are Rasa Bachila, that's not called a Treifa Esri. It's not Treif. What is Basa B'cholov? It's all, that's not Treif. I'm not allowed to lock the gates around my farm. So even if I lock the gates, so it's my Aveira, I lock the gates, and now I have the fruit of my Aveira, I have the apples or the oranges in my house, whoever's going to eat those oranges is as if he's helping out in the Aveira, as if he's continuing to lock the gates. Because if you're going to let the guy get away with his shtick, he locked the gates, he did the Aveira, but now you're allowed to eat the food, so everyone is going to do it. So according to the Rabbeinu Tam, we said, he's not allowed to eat the fruits later. Whoever eats the fruits is considered as if he's a partner and having locked the gates. But I say, so you did an Averis. It's a different thing. But you can't say that, you can't say that, so I'm not going to eat the Esri, but you can't say that it's a Treif Esri, it's not also Bachil. That's Rav Soloveitchik thought. That's what they used to advertise every Matzoi Shvius, when they were holding by Rosh Hashanah of Matzoi Shnas HaShmitas, and the Yiddish newspapers, they always used to advertise that Rav Soloveitchik thought that he personally didn't think that the Mechir was correct. But he still said there's not, he didn't think that it would be an Isser because of Meshumah. He said most of the Rishonim don't accept the Rabbeinu Tam's opinion about Meshumah. And even if one were to follow the Rabbeinu Tam's opinion, it's still Yesh Bahet Rachil. That's not called Naim Het Rachil. Okay. So we left that. We still left out many, many halachas about Shemitah. We'll have to establish whether people are interested in listening to a third shir on the same topic or not. Hagut Tavach.
Yashkar.
The next Rav Shechter's next Rav Shechter's next shir will take place in 2 weeks. The time will be announced. I think it's after they change the clock, so it'll be earlier.
Change the clock.
Right, it'll be earlier. We'll have to decide on a correct time. And next week, Mir Tzashem, Rabbi Dr. Moshe Sakala will be giving a shiur on Sefer Ovadia at 8 o'clock.